Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us over the hump of the week. It's Wednesday, the 19th of May, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Alan Cawley is in studio as the Premier League keeps on delivering drama.
He's through Cavani. What an attempt! What a goal! That is why he's a crowd pleaser, and that's why it's so special. The crowds are here to witness a moment like that.
Edison makes the save. Byrne turns it in. The goal stands, and City are beating your fancy. And there's the whistle. Joy for Brighton. Enormous frustration for City.
Chelsea leapfrog their Wembley conquerors into third place. And if Liverpool win at Burnley, Leicester will be out of the top four.
We'll be live around the grounds for today's games very shortly. Plus, Nadine Doherty is with us to talk ladies' football, as is Cavan and Collingwood's Aisling Sheridan.
They've done well, but Sheridan has got three and lashes it into the net for yet another goal. That's fantastic full forward play, and almost single-handedly, you have to say that the girl from Mullaghorn has turned this game around, and she could well have put Cavan into the semi-final.
Kick inside 50 from Kiyoshi, 2-1 for the Blues. They both went to ground. That opens the door for Darcy. She can trot in, hand it off, and now Sheridan gets her first goal in AFLW.
Put along to the hotspot. Malloy has the shepherding. Not needed. Sheridan's
kicked
the goal.
We'll have Aoife Murray on Camogie, plus lots of news on our Tokyo hopefuls in action this evening.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. I'm delighted to say two things. Fans are back in the stadiums and Alan Cawley is back in studio. What a time to be alive, Al.
Marie, what a time to be alive. And have I some making up to do, I tell you what. I think we all do, but yeah, it is. You can feel, I suppose, everybody's spirits have been lifted over the last maybe 10 days, couple of weeks since the restrictions were lifted. So it's been really good and really positive. And you say, on the sporting front and the football front in particular, the fans at the matches. I think last night in the games I watched, the two games, the Man United game and then the game afterwards with Leicester and Chelsea, I think they were probably two of the most enjoyable games I've seen in a long time, and not anything to do with what was going on the pitch, just to see the fans in the ground and the reaction and what it meant to everybody as well, Marie. So
I found a difference. I found that, like, when you're watching a match and you're doing bits and pieces around the house and it's on the telly, and when there's no fans, you could kind of drift away and go into the kitchen. But when the fans are on and you can hear them and they're there, like, you don't leave. You're actually glued to it.
It feels real again.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
There was something about the games with obviously with no fans, and it almost felt, and especially, I know we were putting in the commentary and then there was sometimes you had the choice, I suppose, but it always felt to me that they were like training ground games, and I've played in a couple of behind closed doors games, and it is that eerie feel. And as much as people want to criticise maybe the players, and I have done throughout the season, it is hard on them to get yourself going week after week playing in front of nobody. So to have the fans back last night, and even looking at a couple of the games, the best game was probably Man City and Brighton. The atmosphere was unreal, and maybe the fact that the fans were back, plus the fact that the underdog beating the champions as well, some great goals in the game. It even led to a bit of needle on the sideline with the managers. Like, we've missed all that, Marie. The moans and the groans from the fans in the crowd. Like, Rashford at one stage came on a sub and he gave the ball away. And I think the players have been getting away with a lot, really, towards the last year, because they don't have that pressure on them, or they don't have the moans and groans. And the fans were straight away moaning and groaning. You kind of need that as well.
And like, sense of anticipation that something's going to happen, because you can hear what the fans are, how they're reacting and how they're feeling, and, you know, just the expectation that comes when they're in the ground.
Because the Cavani one, when he went through, you could hear everybody straight away. You could see what was going to happen, that he was going to attempt the lob, and the fans, obviously, their spirits were raised straight away. The outcome was just incredible. So it is, it makes a hell of a difference, Marie. It's been a long 15 months for everybody to have them back. And I think now, just for, I suppose, we're looking at the games across the water, to have the fans back now for all our sports here, I think that's the next step that we're all looking forward to and that we want as soon as possible.
Well, there are loads of games on. Some of them have kicked off already. Everton, Wolves, Newcastle and Sheffield United and Tottenham Hotspur and Aston Villa, they're all underway since 6 o'clock. We're going to cross over now to Guy Swindles, who is at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Guy.
Well, it's currently 0-0. We've had just 7 minutes play, but largely it's been about the crowd singing He's one of our own. He's one of our own. Harry Kane, he's one of our own. Interesting, too, that when the teams were read out to the crowd before the match started, he got easily the biggest cheer of the night. So, for whatever reason, with all the talk about him possibly wanting to leave the club, it doesn't look as if any of the fans particularly blame him for that, much more the club, as it's, what a goal! Absolutely spectacular goal from Bergwijn. Back in the team for his first start since February, he broke through and then just lashed it into the top of the net, right-footed from the edge of the area. 10,000 people have a chance to celebrate a wonderful goal, and it's Spurs 1, Aston Villa 0.
Well, Alan Colley, I did say what a time to be alive. Now we have a goal with crowds while we're live on air. It's like the perfect Wednesday.
The time, Marie, the time. And I don't know, is that good omen that I'm back in the studio? I didn't predict that. But I know it's brilliant, it is. And you can even hear, obviously, from the commentator alone, Guy is absolutely over the moon as well. So it makes, look, it makes a hell of a difference for everybody. The fans, and I don't think anybody should underestimate the fact of just what fans bring. Fans make the game and make the sport, and the players will tell you that themselves, playing in front of the fans. That's all they want, to feel that adulation when they score. Like, you see the goals, the players, was it Webster running out to the fans when he scored for Brighton last night, and all the players, and that's what they have missed. So great start for Spurs.
Alan, you mentioned how important the fans are, and we hear they're chanting for Harry Kane, but that won't be enough to keep him. Well, you know, he's made his decision now, and you know, everyone goes on that Tottenham are hard to deal with, but gentlemen's agreements don't really come for much when the market can determine where he could go.
Donica, I'm only in the studio 7 minutes and straight in with the tough questions.
I wish.
Yeah, to be fair, I was delighted to hear Guy saying that the fans were singing his name as well, because I'd hate to think they would turn on him now because of, obviously, the announcement that was made last week. So, of course, the fans love him. He doesn't owe the club anything for the service that he's given him. He's been absolutely amazing. But I think any knowledgeable supporters or football fans will understand the fact that he's probably the best striker in the world, and he's at a stage now where he's probably looking at Spurs and questioning where they're going in terms of having no manager in place. Obviously, the things didn't work out with Mourinho, where he probably felt he would give it a try under Mourinho, and it didn't work out. So he's at the stage now, Donica, I think if he doesn't leave now, he'll never leave. But as you said, the contract that's hanging over his head, and probably one of the shrewdest in the business, Daniel Levy, will mean that it's probably going to be a tough slog of negotiation that's going to take place over the summer. But I do think he will leave in the end. Like, people are questioning who's going to pay the money. I think there'll be any amount of them that will pay the money. He's guaranteed goals. He's the best striker in the world, as they say, or one of them. He's an amazing player. Also, what he gives you off the pitch in terms of how he conducts himself and behaves as well, Donica, I don't think money will even come into it. If I was Man City or Man United or any of them, you'd break the bank for him.
Absolutely, Al. So there are some other games on this evening as well. At 7 o'clock, it's to Sellers Park for Crystal Palace against Arsenal. And at 8.15, Turf Moor Horse, Burnley and Liverpool. And Burnley won this corresponding fixture at Anfield earlier in the season, which is not good, but we'll be chatting to Al a little bit about that in a while. And at also at 8.15, West Brom are playing West Ham. So there is lots and lots of action. But just to last night, Al, you know, you did say you really enjoyed it. It was brilliant to see the fans back. But for Chelsea to beat Leicester, it's such a big blow for them. It's such a crucial part of the season.
Yeah, it was. And funny, looking at Brendan Rodgers' reaction after the match, Marie, it's amazing the relief of winning the FA Cup probably brought him, because all the doom and gloom that was around Leicester last year in terms of the fact that they dropped out of the top four on the last day, having been in the top four positions for so long last year, and the narrative around the fact that it was Rodgers and, oh, he slipped at the last hurdle again, and this was the kind of narrative around it, which I never really bought into at all, because the fact that he had them up there was an amazing, really, when you consider them, the other teams that he was competing against in terms of resources and budget, Marie. So this year, for the same thing to happen, obviously he would have taken a lot of stick, but the fact that he's got the FA Cup in the bank on Saturday, I think that made a whole host of a difference to last night's result. And even though they lost,
like, we're talking about next season, like, mm-hmm. it's going to be, we're going to be in next season before we know it, and they're not going to be thinking about winning the FA Cup last year. They're going to be thinking that they're not in the Champions League.
No, but for what that meant to that club, Marie, having never won, the scenes that we seen on Saturday, it was probably the first time in as long as I can remember, since I suppose the FA Cup has lost its magic, that we actually saw scenes on Saturday of what it meant to the people and the locals, Leicester, the local community. We had Gary Lineker presenting it, and him going back through when he was a kid and his dad, and all the magic.
It was romantic, Hal, was it?
Yeah, and I'm a romantic at heart, Marie, you should notice. It felt like the magic was back, and then they brought, obviously, we all know the tragedy with the owner, and his son comes down onto the pitch. So I felt for Leicester to win it, and for Rodgers to deliver a trophy. That was the key thing, to deliver silverware, Marie. He done that. If he gets them into the top four, I think he'll be in with a shout for manager of the year. But the big point for me is the fact if he doesn't get them into top four, unlike last year, I don't think the criticism will be as harsh because he has the FA Cup in the bank.
Now, moving on to Chelsea, Al. You did say at the start of the season that you thought Chelsea were going to win the league. It looks like they're going to get top four, which is all right.
Wasn't far off, was I? Yeah, well, looking at them, to be fair, I always felt, and even when Lampard was there at the start of the season, why I made the suggestion going back to the start of the year was the fact that they signed really well. And you look at the squad of players, Marie, that was the reason too, shall I say, was so keen to take over, because he took over not long after leaving PSG. Sometimes some of them managers take a longer break or take time out. He was straight back in because he probably looked at the potential that was in that Chelsea squad. Now, whether he envisaged the fact that he would take over and get them from ninth into the top four and into the Champions League final and the FA Cup final, I think he'd be probably lying if he said that to you. But the fact that he delivered that, it wasn't a great surprise to me because of the squad of players that were there. They're an unbelievable squad. And if they go out in the off-season, I know we suggested Kane and where he'll go. I don't think he'll go to Chelsea. But if Chelsea will bring in a top striker in the off-season, I think they're very, very close to challenging Man City and the likes of Liverpool. I really do, Marie, because that was the prediction I made at the start of the year. If they were to get a striker in now, and now that they have a top quality manager, because to be fair to Lampard, he was probably showing up for where he was at in terms of his managerial career. Now that Tuchel has come in and delivered so much with them, and it looks like they may get the top four, and the fact that I think they have a great chance of winning the Champions League, if they assign a striker in the off-season, because the squad is ready assembled to go. If they assign a centre-forward in the off-season, a top quality one, I think they'll challenge next year.
Alan, just on getting the best out of players, Timo Werner, you read, you know, social media and you hear the fans saying the work he does off the ball is incredible. Obviously he's not scoring as much as he'd like, but you know, the amount of offsides there, is he, you know, like, I remember with rugby when we got Christian Cullen first, he was big for these upfield lines, so he was nearly half cheating. Is he seeing something? Is he ahead of the game, or is he just offside or not being able to nail it?
I think, to be fair to him, he's just gone through such a rough patch, Dunica. But I think the fact that Tuchel came in, it probably came in at the right time for him, and he's backed him, to be fair, Tuchel. It was one of the questions that was put to Tuchel last night after the match, saying that Timo Werner seemed to be involved in everything good. And I love Tuchel's answer. He said, that's his job. He needs to be involved in everything good. And come Sunday, he needs to be involved in everything good as well. So he's backing him. The fact that he's German, there's obviously a relationship there with him, which I think is good. I think he'll come good yet, Dunic. I wouldn't write him off yet. There's a lot has gone on this year in terms of moving over, adjusting to life in London. I think he got COVID at one point during the season as well. So I think the fact that, and to be fair to the Chelsea fans last night, regardless of the struggles that he's been going through this season, the gave him some, the support that were giving him, I suppose, when he scored, and even the disallowed goals as well, and they respected the fact that he was trying his heart out. So I think he'll come good yet, and I certainly wouldn't be writing him off.
Yeah, well, if they can all click, I think they will be pretty phenomenal.
They've a serious squad,
yeah,
like,
they do, and the
big thing about it now, like what we see with Guardiola club, they've an elite level manager there now, and the difference that makes, like, I'm even going back, you look at Rodgers and Leicester. Rodgers has put himself into that bracket now, in my view, of being an elite manager up with those boys. The job he's done, when you think he is the eighth highest budget, competing with the money that's been spent from the top clubs, it's phenomenal what Brendan Rodgers has done.
We have a text in, Alan. Is Harry Kane injury prone and a risk?
No chance. He has had a couple of injuries, Marie, but you look at him and the goals and his goals return, and everything he brings in terms of his leadership as well. Even this year, his assists with Son, they're right up there with all the other players in the league in terms of assists as well. So I think for what he brings, and at the stage he's at now, he's in the prime of his life. He's gone into the Euros with England as well. I'm sure he might want his career sorted out before the Euros started. I don't think it will be. I think that might drag on for the summer yet, Marie, where he goes. But I don't think he's a risk, as I say. If I was Man United or Man City or Chelsea, you'd break the bank for him.
Alan, does it build a pressure on Daniel Levy? You mentioned him there. Everyone's he's a shrewd operator, but it is a business. And, you know, over the last while, they were in a Champions League final and they've really seemed to fall away. I know they've done stuff with the stadium, but it's a football club after all.
Yeah, I think it does. To be honest, I think it's a good point, Dunnick. I think it does build a pressure on him because since they got rid of Pochettino, they've gone downhill really in terms of the team that they were, and obviously the Mourinho project didn't work out, as we all know. And I think that's probably the main reason Harry Kane is looking at the situation now, and he's questioning just where that club is going. And does he want to hang around for another couple of seasons and finish in fifth or sixth, or else he can go to the likes of Man City, possibly United, wherever he goes, with the opportunity to maybe win a Premier League or a Champions League? He's probably looking at the likes of the example with Shearer over the years, and everybody looks back at Shearer now and thinks, should he have made the move? Should he have went? Like, Shearer will tell you, it was my dream to go to Newcastle and they were my boyhood club and all that stuff. Deep down, he should have went.
He's
to
looking
Man-Aid.
At Kyle Walker and going, that could be me.
There you go. But no, I can't wait to see where he goes. It'll be so interesting. But Solskjaer was asked the question last night, and to be fair, he was respectful in the sense that he said, I'm not going to talk about another club's player. But inside, he must be thinking, oh my God, I would snap your hand off to get Harry Kane. Everyone would, surely. He's the best, Marie.
That's for sure. I don't know if Liverpool would though.
No, but I still think Liverpool will be fine when they get their full complement of players back. I think the interesting one for them will be Salah, but they'll just stick Alisson up front for next year.
It's hard to believe that if they do beat Burnley tonight, it'll be their first time in the top four since February.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair to Liverpool, and this isn't making excuses for them at all, I think if Klopp gets them into top four, I think he'll have done unbelievably well. When you think of all the factors that we've discussed throughout the season, Marie, and the injuries and COVID, and then obviously, I know Klopp was really hurt over that Super League stuff. Remember the night against Leeds there on the Monday Night Football, his reaction to being literally thrown under the bus he was by his owner. So there's been a lot has gone on behind the scenes at Liverpool this year. I think he's managed it really well. And if he does get them into the top four, which it looks like he has a great opportunity to.
They have a woeful record though against teams like Burnley.
Marie, come on.
She's not having
and
any.
And then they have
hope.
Crystal Palace and Roy Hodgson leaving.
Burnley have, they haven't kept a clean sheet in the last 11 games, Burnley. Burnley are struggling. They got hammered by Leeds last week 4-0. Liverpool are unbeaten in 7. They've won their last 3. Can I sell it to you anymore?
you're feeling confident. That's good. We'll be chatting a little bit more about the Premier League games as we go throughout the show. But let's have a chat about Sligo Rovers because they are doing something really phenomenal. So they're going to redevelop their existing stadium at the showgrounds and build a new academy complex in Sligo. And it's going to cost an estimated $17.3 million. But it is pretty amazing, the vision that they have.
Yeah, it's fantastic news, Marie. Obviously, the story broke yesterday, but funny enough, Tommy Higgins is the chairman now, and I know Tommy, he's a local man. I met him, it was before COVID, so we're going back maybe a year and a half ago, and just having a coffee with him, and he was only after taking over. He was a successful businessman in his own right over the years, but always loved Sligo Rovers and got involved once he retired himself. And he had this vision going back to Emery, and he outlined these plans to me. Obviously, it's over a cup of coffee and you're thinking, will it ever take shape? Yesterday, we saw the fruits of those plans. Now, at the moment, it is a plan, but I think the reaction that they got from the local people, the local politicians, the local councils, the reaction nationwide as well from everybody, the League of Ireland people, seeing exactly the potential that's there for a local community-based club. I think it's absolutely fantastic, Marie. And obviously, there's going to come maybe a few barriers, a few hurdles along the way, but I think the reaction from everybody and the funding that's needed and the public funding and from the local councils, politicians, I think everybody should get behind this project because it's not just about Sligo Rovers, the football team. I think what it's going to bring to the whole community as well, and the fact that the plans are to put in office spaces, a museum, maybe a restaurant, a bar. It would basically transform the whole area. And the showgrounds is looking very well at the moment, Marie.
It always does.
They've done great work over the years. And that's one thing they should be applauded on because a lot of the clubs over the years in the League of Ireland, they have success, but they forget about the actual infrastructure of the ground. And they pile all the money into the wages and trying to win a league again or whatever the case may be. And a lot of the times it's fallen flat on their face. To be fair to Sligo Rovers, even when they won the league back in 2012, the first thing they did was put in a new stand behind the goals, a lovely looking stand, and the ground looks great. But if they were to get these plans off the ground, which I am fully convinced they will, Marie, because of the people that's behind this, and as I say, I think all the politicians, all the local councillors, everyone in the northwest area should get behind this, because if this was to take off and take shape, I think it would basically kickstart all the other clubs and stadiums around the area. And I've been calling for this stuff, Marie, going back 10 years. Like, this has gone on years and years. The one thing we needed to improve in the league, regardless of the stuff that goes on the pitch, and obviously, look, a lot of things, we won't go into the stuff with the FAI and different things over the years, but we have to improve facilities. And you look at some of the other sports and the GAA and the rugby, what we're competing against. The League of Ireland facilities are in the halfpenny place when you're competing with some of them other sports. So I think this is absolutely fantastic news, and I can't wait to see the fruits of it.
Alan, just on it, Sligo Rovers, there is mention of Sligo Rugby. Is there any chats of, you know, like the French model of working with other sports? I'm just thinking, I know the sports ground is brilliant for Connacht, but if you were to go to see a Connacht game in Sligo, just the support that would come out from, just even playing Interpros there, dragging other provinces to harder places, just, you know, the tie-in to make it a ground for all sports.
Yeah, and I think that's the plans as well, Donegan. Now, I don't think it's dependent on that, but I think Sligo Rugby have been obviously involved in maybe the chats or the negotiations that have gone on, and these are the plans, because I think, to be fair to Tommy, the one thing he always wanted was the fact that the showgrounds is lying idle from November maybe up until March, 5 months, which is ridiculous really when you think about it, for all the League of Ireland clubs. He wants to maybe have even concerts and all sorts throughout the winter months, or as Dunica says, if you were to have an Interpro match, Connacht playing Ulster and Sligo, it would be amazing, I think. And I think that's what all the grounds should be doing. That's what they do across the, obviously, some of the European countries. I remember going to a match in Spain, Espanyol, and the municipal stadium they had, and there was a supermarket and a full-on shopping centre was in the state, like on the built into the whole ground as well. So it's fantastic, and I think these plans, as I say, Donegan, sometimes you look at these and you think they might be pipe dreams. I think this is a reality that's going to come to fruition.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely fantastic, and we wish them all the best with that. Now we are going to cross back over to Guy Swindles, who is at Spurs versus Aston Villa.
Spurs 1, Aston Villa 1, and while the Spurs fans have got their voice back now, moments ago they were completely silenced. Marvellous Nakamba played in a not very marvellous ball, nothing ball really. Sergio Reguilón, though, trying to play a regulation clearance, managed to volley it spectacularly sliced fashion into his own net. Lloris very nearly pulled off a fabulous save, but in the end just couldn't keep the ball out. So Villa level and deserved to be. They could have had a penalty before that when Ollie Watkins was taken out by Lloris, but the ball had passed both players, so couldn't therefore be given a penalty. And then moments ago, Dyer's been forced into a great block to deny Watkins again. So at the moment, it's Spurs 1, Villa 1. Great game. Anything could happen. Villa, though, the better team.
Alan, another great game.
I'm just looking at the goal the guy has described. Oh, really, honestly, Reguilón. I shouldn't be laughing, but that is absolutely shocking. He swipes his right foot. Obviously, he's a left-footed player playing left foot. Comes across his body, and he goes to clear it with his right foot and completely slices it into the top corner. At that level, it's a horrendous mistake.
It sounds like it never happened to you, Al.
Never, ever. I never would either.
Right, we're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to come back and chat ladies football.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Now, welcome back. So I am delighted to say that we are going to be chatting all things women's Gaelic games now, starting with ladies football, because the LGFA and Lidl Ireland have announced that 50 games in this season's National Football League will be streamed live and available to view for free. And we are joined on the line by Aisling Sheridan Cavan and Collingwood star, along with former Donegal player Nadine Doherty. Aisling, I'm going to go to you first. Myself and Donegal and Alan Cawley here have been delighted that we have some fans back in stadium, that there's live sport on, there's a bit of sunshine, but you've had that for months.
Yeah, you know, I suppose I was lucky enough to be out in Australia for the past few months and kind of experienced that. I suppose there was some games now where things changed and, you know, we weren't allowed any crowds. So I suppose in the last year, if it has taught me anything, it's kind of to be able to adapt, especially when it comes to sport, and to be just thankful to be able to play, I suppose.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we're very thankful as well, Nadine, because we are going to be able to see all these ladies' Gaelic football games free, live, streamed. And it's such a huge sign of progress. We don't have Nadine, so I'm going to go to you, Aisling. We're going to be able to watch you in every one of your games. No pressure now.
Yeah, no, look at it. It's absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, credit to Lidl when they had announced it and, you know, they were talking to us. You know, it's something that I straight away was amazed by and just thought, you know, it's absolutely brilliant to be able to live stream the games for free, especially when it's league. You know, probably a lot of people even don't pay as much attention to league as they do championship. So we even take it that one step forward and to be able to broadcast our league games, you know, 50, 60 league games in all the divisions. You know, it's honestly amazing, and it just shows how much work and effort they've put in to ladies' Gaelic football in the past, in recent years, and even this year they've just taken it one step forward. And yeah, no, it's just phenomenal.
Aisling, you must see how important it is as well when you're, you know, playing Aussie Rules and the games being on TG Carr. Just the lift it gives for momentum for young girls to watch it, or even just for local people around the area to be excited about something.
Oh, 100%. You know, especially the past few weeks when all the games are being streamed then back home, and you know, even the replays of the games, you know, they were playing two games every weekend, one on a Saturday and a Sunday. And you know, I know a lot of the girls did, but if I take me personally, I received a lot of messages from people all over Ireland that were watching the games, not just young girls, you know, grown-ups, elderly. I received so many messages. I was honestly blown away. And then, yeah, for, you know, especially young girls growing up, you know, when I think back to growing up, I probably didn't have as much people to look up to. I probably didn't see much female role models. And now there is that shift in recent years, which is absolutely phenomenal. And I've received loads of messages from parents, neighbours, people around, you know, the younger girls are striving to get to their county panel and, you know, really progress in sport, which is amazing.
And Nadine, we're going to have no excuse now. We're going to be able to see every single game for our previews and our reviews.
Yeah, absolutely, Maria. I was thinking that earlier, you know, for those of us working in the media, I suppose at times on a Sunday evening, it's tricky. You're relying on maybe radio reports or newspaper reports after that. But as you said, no excuse now. We'll be able to watch every single league game, which I think in turn will generate more coverage. And the coverage obviously will be more in depth. And as Donegh always reminds me, I like to give the refs a bit of a hard time.
That's
so,
sure.
I'll be able to assess them all. I'll have my rubric in front of me. But no, look, it's great. And we really get to see, I feel, a pattern of play with teams. We get to see, you know, teams, how they set up, etc. So it'll be brilliant. I can't wait.
I really will. And Aisling, just for yourself now, you're obviously back a few weeks straight into the thick of it, and the games are going to start coming thick and fast as well. How have you adjusted to being back?
Adjusting has probably been a bit slower than I'd like. I was comparing it to last year, and then when I took a step back and, you know, actually compared both years, you know, last year I came home and we were straight into a 10-week lockdown, if not more, or if not longer. So, you know, this year I essentially had maybe 2 weeks to adjust. You know, we're playing this weekend, so 2 to 3 weeks. So, yeah, the first training back, I was quite nervous and it probably shown in training. But I've been lucky to just been able, even in the rain, getting up to my local football field and trying to just get my hands on the round ball and just get used to, I suppose, the kicking mechanism and stuff like that, because it is a little bit different in comparison to an oval ball. But, you know, the transition is coming, and I suppose I have to have that self-confidence that, you know, and that it is there, that I've played the game my whole life, that it's not as bad as I probably think.
Nadine, just on it, like, we're going to have a massive influence now of the likes of Aisling coming back into the game from Aussie Rules. Should we see more physicality in the game now?
I feel over the last couple of years that football has definitely become more physical anyway. You know, you would have had a big influx of rugby coming into ladies football, and that had a bit of an impact. But I think the biggest factor really is how strength and conditioning has improved and developed over the last number of years. You know, players feel stronger, they are stronger, they're more confident getting into those physical battles. And yeah, look, the Aussie Rules girls who come back in, they'll definitely bring that physicality, but there probably aren't enough of them to have an overall influence. And just to ask Aisling there about, you know, fitting back in terms of fitness levels, Aisling, like obviously you're coming from the end of a season where your level of fitness has peaked, and you're back training now with girls, I suppose, who are only back training collectively 3 weeks in. So do you find yourself at a totally different level, or how does that compare?
Surprisingly, I haven't noticed too much of a difference. I think kind of when our season finished, because I was training pretty much flat out since November, December in the run-up. I did a lot of pre-season at home myself, and then my 2 weeks hotel quarantine, and then into pre-season. And I found our training load kind of stepped back while in season in Australia, because we were just maintaining what we had. And then once the season finished, I had three weeks in Australia, where I didn't really push myself too hard. You know, I essentially train every week of the year, and I don't really get an off season, so I kind of use them 3 weeks to just take my own time. So I maybe in that kind of 3 week span, I kind of maybe wasn't as running fit as I could be. But no, coming back then, you know, the girls, I have to give them credit; they really have put in good work, and you know, I haven't actually noticed too much of a difference.
And Nadine, those girls have really raised the profile, I think, not of the women's AFL, but of ladies' football here, because we were able to watch them for those months. And now we're going to see them coming back into the game. And there's going to be so many familiar faces, familiar names, because when there was no sport on, we had those women on TG Carr every evening, and we were talking about them all the weeks in the run-up as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant. As you said, it was, you know, not even so much a distraction. People actually follow it properly now, and that is down to the girls. And, you know, I suppose even with social media, how it's really put the girls out there, it's fantastic. And one image that comes to mind of Aisling actually is when they made the grand final, and there's a lovely picture of her calling home. And I'm sure you would have seen a lot of young girls, and not even younger players, I would feel experienced players, seeing that level that the girls are playing at, seeing that exposure and how entertaining that game was. And I would find that the AFL, even here at home, and it might be on more of a social level, but the AFL at home seems to be growing as well. And a lot of GA players have taken it up in the off season. So it's just complimenting ladies football, I would feel, overall. It's brilliant.
For now it is anyway, but it is expanding, Aisling, and it is going to keep getting bigger. The season is going to get longer, and eventually we'll probably get to a stage where it might not be as feasible really to go over, but for now it is workable. Do you see more and more of the Irish women going out?
Yes, I definitely do. Next year, it's probably a tricky one to call. They recently announced that they changed the timing of the season, so it's starting 2 months earlier. And each year, it gets a week longer. But I know next year, we kind of come out of the collective bargaining agreement that the AFLW has signed into. So their long-term goal is to have it a full-time or a fully professional sport. So I imagine in the next 2 to 3 years, it will be a much longer season, not just the 6 months. And then obviously with 4 new teams coming in, they need a panel of 30. And, you know, the game is only in its 5th year. So I'd say in 2 years' time, when there's 4 new teams looking for players, players are moving to different teams. You know, I definitely think there'll be a lot of Irish looked at. You know, seeing how well and how many, you know, got out last year and, you know, transitioned into the game quite well, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a good few girls will be approached anyway to come out, and then it'll be their decision. You know, will it work with their GAA season? Or, you know, how do they feel about moving out, especially kind of given the certain time of year it is.
Nadine, what a brilliant opportunity though for young women to, you know, have an opportunity to play and live out a professional life and have a life experience as well. We were saying that, you know, it's great to be able to see it, but there's going to be coaches and selectors keeping an eye on our talent pool.
Yeah, absolutely, Donegal. It's a huge opportunity for players, and I could down the line see players maybe taking a year or two out of football, and maybe instead of doing that around the world travelling, that might be restricted for the next year or two because of COVID, they might opt to go to Australia for the year, for the 2 years, and just live it up because, you know, as Ashleen said, it's a lovely lifestyle. You're a professional athlete and you will have that time off to travel as well. So, look, you wouldn't blame anybody for leaving. And I think as well that if our championship doesn't get a bit more competitive than what it is, you might see a lot of players from, I suppose you might call, you know, middle counties or lesser counties, just giving it a go. And why not?
It will be interesting to see how it develops. And Ashleen, before we let you go, how are you fixed for the weekend?
Well, look, it's a good old rivalry now, not going to lie, between us and Monaghan. You know, there will be that, I suppose, in the back of everyone's head. But I think we're fixed quite good. You know, we've new management this year, a lot of new faces, which is brilliant, a lot of new girls. So we've kind of taken this as a fresh year and, you know, fingers crossed we'll go out and trust the process and hopefully get the result we want.
Well, Ashleen, best of luck with that. And thanks for everything over the last few months as well. You kept us going when times were tough, when we'd nothing to be watching. And we look forward to watching you in all those free games over the next few weeks. I'm going to keep you, Nadine, though, because I do want to go through the games. And it is brilliant to have them back and to get to see all the big teams as well very, very early in the season. So we're going to start with Cork and Tipperary on Friday night. It's quite an interesting one because Cork have been the steady team. There haven't been a huge amount of changes, where there is new management coming in with Tipperary and Declan Carr taking the reins there.
I suppose just to start with Cork, you know, the league, they've won, I think they won 10 out of the last 12 and they would have been thereabouts last year. The ship is steady. They were talking, actually, you know, they feel they're beyond that team in transition. So I could see them being well set up to kick off and kick on Friday. Yeah, look, big changes for Tip. Big statement, Maloney's captain. Declan Carr brings a good bit of pedigree himself. Former Tip hurler, I think he is, and he seems to have a backroom team full of hurling people. Look, Tip will be fantastic again this year. I could see them. I'd say their chat really is, we had the performances last year and we missed out narrowly on the results. So their camp will be looking to build on that. And I just think Tip, they don't seem to fear anybody, you know. So I think they'll just look at this Cork game as an opportunity to get points on the board. And saying that, it's very, very hard to look past Cork, in fairness. Yeah. You know, they're at home and the league is usually their springboard. So I can't see them losing.
It's always... It's always interesting when you see Cork starting out because it does just make you think straight down the line to All-Ireland Final Day almost, because they're just so consistent from the get-go. Let's move on to Mayo and Galway. And like, we're talking about change there in Tipperary, but there's change in both of these teams as well. It's so interesting when new management comes in, and I think especially in Mayo because of what has gone before and the fact that the Cornicon players weren't there. We know we're not going to see Cora Staunton back. We are expecting to see Fiona McHale at some stage. All right, but it definitely, I think, spells change and is set up nicely for them to improve on the last few years.
Yeah, look, Mayo went through a roller coaster the last few years. Nobody can deny that. It was all out in the media. And while they did gel to a certain point, I just don't think they ever got over it. Chance of a clean slate. Michael Moyles, there was, you know, big announcements, a huge backroom team. I mean, wow, it was amazing. And I was just a little disappointed to see just one woman in there, Marisa McDonald. I think it was a big opportunity for Mayo to maybe get a few more ex-players. Be brilliant to see Fiona McHale back. Speaking of physicality, she'll definitely bring it. She'll bring that engine. But it'll be interesting to see how Mayo do get over that, because, you know, it was massive. It's a hard thing to get over. And look, hopefully for football and hopefully for them, it's a clean slate and we'll see the best of what we can of Mayo. And then, Galway, new management as well. Brilliant to see Annette Clark in there as a selector. I think that was a real shrewd move by Gerry Fahey. Clarkey has been working with underage. I mean, one of the best players to ever play with Galway, ever to play the game. Big loss in Sinead Burke. I just think she has been incredible for them. Probably one of the top 5-6 defenders in the country over the last couple of years.
she'll be hard to replace. Look, Galway, they'll be exhilarating at times for us, and the last few years they've kind of disappointed when it comes to the crunch, but you know, no more than Cork when it comes to the league. Galway are always steady, so I think they might sneak this one. I just think they have a little bit more of a steadiness from last year coming into this one, so I could see them tipping it.
Okay, stay with us, Nadine, because we are going to cross back over to Guy Swindles, who has reports of a goal between Spurs and Aston Villa.
Spurs 1, Aston Villa 2. We've all had one of those days where everything we do goes wrong. Sergio Reguilón is certainly having one of those. After that magnificent own goal he scored to equalise for Aston Villa, moments ago, twice he had ample opportunities to clear the ball. Twice he hit it straight at Bertrand Traore, the second deflection falling right into the path of Ollie Watkins, who had the freedom of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium to tuck the ball home. Villa deserve it, though. At the moment, Spurs, funnily enough, seem almost awed by the fact that the crowd are in the ground. They're not playing anywhere near as well as they did at the weekend, and they're really struggling. It's Spurs 1, Aston Villa 2, and the crowd are getting on Spurs' back at the moment. They're not enjoying what they're seeing.
Alan, a day where everything goes wrong.
He's having an absolute nightmare, Reggie.
And you were enjoying every minute of it.
Yeah, well, sure, look. Yeah, at that level, you have to take the good with the bad, Marie, and he's struggling at the moment, so he'll have to take what's coming. But yeah, this whatever about the OG can happen, I suppose, because he slashed at it. But that one, he has no excuse. He's trying to basically play a pass inside, and he had two opportunities as well, as Guy described, and he's having an absolute nightmare. Another little note with that match, Marie, just a quick one, is obviously all the talk about Kane, but Jack Grealish is starting as well for Aston Villa tonight, his first game back.
I've seen him rolling around a few times.
And the England squad is going to be announced on Tuesday. He will be in the squad, I would say. But the big thing for Grealish as well is where will he go next year? Because I think Grealish is an absolute superstar as well. So just a little note on that one also.
Yeah, it will be interesting to follow him. And Nadine, a team that rarely has anything go wrong for them is Dublin. They're going for 5 in a row this year, playing Waterford in their first game of the league. I'd imagine, though, they're not going to be peaking too early in the season.
No, and they never do. They give us a little bit of hope that somebody else will have a chance. And they mix around with their squad and then they just come and win it in September. But look, a little bit of change with them as well. You know, Noel has retired, Noel Healy, and I mean, what a wonderful career. And I was delighted to see all the media coverage and the plaudits that she got over the last number of weeks, because what a player, and we wish her the best. So life without Noel will be different, you know. I think Sinead Goldrick will more than likely be out for the league. You know, she had that bad injury over in Australia. So a few little adjustments. But look, you look at Dublin this year, you have the old guard, a lot of them still there. Plus a brilliant young guard coming through that had yet another year's experience of winning in All-Ireland. So look, excited to see what Dublin come up with this year. You know, I know we're never surprised, but they're always so entertaining. And Waterford, for me, have just been one of those teams. They came up from intermediate a number of years ago, and they just keep getting stronger and stronger and improving year on year. You know, they have quality forwards. They have the Murray sisters, who I just always find so entertaining. And they've given Dublin like a few scares. The quarterfinal last year, you know, if I remember correctly, you know, Dublin just got over the line. Their experience really told. So it'll be a brilliant, brilliant match. If there is to maybe be a little surprise this weekend, I know Dublin are All-Ireland champions and it's a bit of a mad one to call a surprise, but I think Waterford could possibly get a draw maybe. Dublin obviously are favourites, but I think a great game ahead, you know.
And the other game that we didn't get to talk about, Donegal versus Westmeath, your own Donegal, Nadine. We will chat about them next week. We're going to take a very quick break now and then we're back with Camogie.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour. 2!
Welcome back. Now, we did promise at the top of the show that we would have some news on our Irish athletes who are bidding to qualify for the Olympics. There is an athletics meet on in the Czech Republic today, the Golden Spike meet, and we have six athletes in action. So far, Luke McCann has clocked a personal best of 3:37.77. It was his very first big circuit meet, and he was in the 1500 metres. Paul Robinson was also in action, but he was forced to pull out just before the off with an accolades flare-up. Nadia Power, a name familiar to so many now after her remarkable season, finished sixth in the women's 800 metre. Her time of 2:72 seconds was well outside her personal best. And in the men's 800 metre, John Fitzsimons had a massive performance. He clocked a PB of 1:46.62 to finish seventh. Mark English finished 11th in 1:47.85. The Olympic qualification time is 1:45.20, so he needs to make a very big improvement. And on my screen, Sean Tobin is in action in the 3,000 metres, so we will update you on how that is going. And then in swimming, 20-year-old Tennessee-based Sligo swimmer Mona McSherry, another very familiar name to everybody now, has finished in the seventh position in the final of the women's 100 metre breaststroke at the European Championships in Budapest this evening. It was a very tight finish and it ended with a blanket finish, and Mona was just edged out of the medals. Now, in the early games, there was three kickoffs at 6 o'clock. It is half time in all three of them. Everton Wolves nil all, Newcastle Sheffield United nil all, and as we said just before the break, it is 2-1 between Aston Villa and Tottenham Hotspur. Now, I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by former Cork superstar Aoife Murray to talk us through all of the camogie action from last weekend and also to look ahead to this weekend. Aoife, how are you?
Good, how are you?
We're getting through a lot there now, but I'm going to start with Cork because it is your own team. And we were curious to see how they were going to be getting on in their first outing out. We were wondering what Paddy had been up to. You knew nothing. We know now that he was definitely teaching those women to score goals. They scored 3-14 against Tipperary, who scored 16 points. Not a bad first outing.
No, I think, look, when they look back, they'll be quite happy with the day. But oddly, I think Tip might be equally as happy as well. It was one of those games where I think Cork started off extremely sharply, and I think they showed a great intent, and they kind of took off from where they were last year in regards to the style of play, I suppose that intensity, albeit maybe a question mark over can they keep up that intensity for the four quarters, whereas Tip finished the stronger, coming out stronger in that last quarter, kind of stopping the short puck out from Amy Lee. But then again, I think Paddy will be delighted with how they went and blooded a lot of young players as well. So a very positive start.
Yeah, it really was. And a lot of talk afterwards about the Mackie Thompson combination at midfield. Are you liking it?
Yeah, look, I think it's they're quite different players. I suppose Aisling brings a little bit more physicality to that centre partnership. I was a bit worried for the first kind of half. I think when Mackie kind of went into the tackle, she lost the ball quite a bit. But first round of the league, that's a great thing for someone to have to work on. And I think in fairness to Mackie, she really grew into the game, Marie. And I think that the second half, she was a lot steadier and probably went about her business a little bit better. But it's an interesting partnership, one I suppose I look forward to really seeing how it actually develops as a pair.
Yeah, and even complimented really by Chloe Sigerson in that free role that she plays, picking up so much, and just she seems to have really mastered it.
Yeah, I think she'll be delighted that she got that last ball over the bar. I think she wasn't going to look forward to some of the stats with regard to the ball dropping a little bit short into Anya Slattery's hand. But for the first round, she's getting into her range. She's going to understand. And if she gets those opportunities, I think in championship, they will be going over the bar. But she was left, I suppose, roam free out on the wing, Marie, quite a lot. And I was surprised that that Tipperary didn't cut that off a little bit quicker.
You'd have to think, though, that Bill Mullaney is going to have learned an awful lot from that game. It does feel like he still needs to experiment a little bit. He has the players, definitely. He has a great core of quality players there, but the balance just seems a little bit off, Aoife.
Yeah, I think they just need one or two younger players really to come on and maybe take the responsibility off that core. The fact that he had to once again bring Cort Devan away from the goals. Listen, if I was Amy Lee and I saw Cort Devan go way up the field, I would be saying happy days, because she is one of the most dangerous players around the box. And for him having to do that, I just think it's robbing Peter to pay Paul Marie, because she is so dangerous inside that 21. 21 metre line. Fair enough, Cork decided to make, I think it was Aisling Egan, who was our first day fullback, who I thought had a fine game, mm-hmm. in fairness to her. They obviously got Aisling to track her, which opened up things in the inside line. But I think Cork will have that pretty much sorted the next day. The fact that he has to bring Call out to field, I think it is Robin Peter to pay Paul.
So the next up for Tipperary is Waterford, and Waterford will have, I think they're going to feel a little bit of pressure. I think they really need to push on now.
Yeah, and look, I remember talking to you last year, Marie, saying, you know, I think I had tipped Waterford actually to win that quarter final last year, and I was very disappointed, I suppose, really, that they didn't really put up much of a fight. So I agree, I think there's a lot of pressure on them, but look, pressure is a great thing, Marie, and hopefully maybe they need that extra bit of pressure to get a few of the other girls outside of your Niamh Rockets, Beck Cartons or Lorraine Brace, those other girls, maybe that's what they need to really step it up. They've got a good strong management team there as well, so it'll be really interesting to see what they bring to the table.
It will, and also we spoke about Dublin and what they needed to do to try and overcome a Kilkenny team, All-Ireland champions, and they definitely asked questions of them, but I think that just scoring 6 points, a bit like Waterford and Tip there, they need to widen that spread of people who are turning up on the big day and getting those scores.
Yeah, but look, you've got a new management on a team that really has been let down over the last few years by managements and structures, and I think what they need here now is just a solid year, Marie, and I think, you know, holding the All-Ireland champions to 1-8 isn't a bad return either. Obviously, scoring 6 points, it's not going to get you that far, say, in the summer months, but I think holding them to that, and listen, in fairness, I think Faye will know with the goal that, you know, that won't be able to happen at championship time. So taking that out of the equation, they didn't do too bad. Adrian needs to go and put his stamp on the players. What I did see, I thought, was a good workmanlike kind of shift from the Dublin girls, and if they get that base to maybe be their baseline for a championship, then they'll be a hard team to break down as long as they can maybe put a few more scores on the board at the other end.
Well, Dublin are playing awfully next, and then Clare Galway, another one that we were curious about, just to see if Clare could maybe deliver on some of that potential that they definitely have. But Galway, they almost picked up where they left off. Another big score, 3-11 Clare, 15 points. What did you see in Galway that maybe could suggest that they can get back up to the top table again?
Well, look, I suppose you look at the three goals, and you got two from, I think, was it Siobhan McGrath and the other one from Alicia mm-hmm. Riley, and I think, you know, Elise, by her own standards, probably had a quiet final last year, and I think for her, getting her back on the scoring sheets, in particularly goals wise, is a big plus for Galway. I think they kind of started the game a little bit slow, Marie, and I think they just wanted to get over that finish line in the end. It's a great win, but I also thought there was a lot of positives for Clare as well. Not trying to be too political about it, but I genuinely did, and I think if they can build on that as well, you know, hopefully, and we need to see more teams in the top three. And if you look at the weekend, Marie, you know, straight into the quarterfinals, Cork, Kilkenny and Galway straight into the quarters. It would be great if there was maybe two others now really pushing for the point for that last spot.
It really would. And Clare play Limerick next. Aoife Murray, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Now we are going to cross over to Peter Smith, who is at Turf Moor for Burnley versus Liverpool. Peter.
Well, last Sunday at the Hawthorns West Brom, and that last gasp header from Liverpool goalkeeper Alisson is already indelibly etched into Anfield folklore. But the unanswered question amidst the sheer wonderment of the goal is, will it prove the catalyst for Champions League qualification? Winning their final two games, goal difference depending, should be enough. Burnley have acquired more points away from home, three of which came in the corresponding fixture, ending Liverpool's 68-game unbeaten home sequence when a penalty from Ashley Barnes sent Liverpool into free fall, proving the prelude to a further five home losses in a season which promised plenty as defending champions but has resulted in nothing in terms of silverware. But that top four position would still be theirs. Their final day fixture is at home to Crystal Palace. Any type of slip-up, though, over the next 180 minutes would open the door for Leicester, who hosts Spurs on Sunday. As regards team news for tonight, Burnley keeper Nick Pope remains a doubt due to his shoulder problem, with Bailey Peacock-Farrell standing by to deputise again. And Liverpool welcome back James Milner and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain back into their matchday squad. Diego Jota, though, is unlikely to be figuring because of his injury. At Turf Moor, it's Burnley against Liverpool.
Thanks so much, Peter Smith. And just a very quick goal update before we go. Newcastle have taken the lead against Sheffield United with Joe Willock getting the goal there.
And you might not think that's much of a story, Marie, but that's his sixth consecutive appearance where he scored, becoming the youngest player to do so in the competition at 21 years and 272 days. Now wasn't it worth me while
coming
in tonight?
Alan, that is you adding your value, and you will come back?
Absolutely.
Great, it was brilliant to have you. That is all we have time for. Tara Stewart is up next. We will be back tomorrow, and we'll be previewing the Champions Cup final in the company of Mike Prendergast.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Firm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.